Did you know Super Awesome Mix has an app? Go to the Apple App Store today and download Super Awesome Mix. It's free. You could start creating and sending your own digital mixtapes in just a few clicks. Also, there's links to our Instagram account and a link where you can follow your favorite podcast. Speaking of which, welcome back to another Super Awesome Mix. My name is Matt Sedholm, alongside my co-host and co-founder of Super Awesome Mix, Samer Abousalbi. Samer, how are we doing this week?
Doing real well. You made me a mixtape. Thank you so much.
I made you a mixtape. That's right. This is one of our Intro 2 episodes, and it's my turn this time. So I am going to introduce you and all our listeners to a little band out of Ireland called U2. And again, yes. When we do these intro episodes, they're not necessarily groundbreaking bands, but you know, I think this all came about when we were talking about Pearl Jam and you were like, yeah, I don't know how much of their music I've really listened to, just for whatever reason, you never got into them. So, you know, we thought you're probably not the only one out there. And especially with some of these bands that maybe started out a long time ago, just like you two did, that maybe some of our younger listeners just aren't as familiar with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think it's a good one. And funny enough, I actually restarted the show Defiant Ones recently. And so it's really good timing that you would make a U2 mix because, you know, Jimmy Iovine worked with U2 just as much as he worked with Bruce in the early days. And he was talking about how they both had something very similar to one another. And I can see that in a lot of their songs, especially their earlier stuff. So it's pretty cool. It's cool how it all like all mixes together like that.
Yeah, and of course, both groups led by distinctive frontmen. In the case of U2, it is Bono, of course. That is the lead man. The Edge is the lead guitarist. Adam Clayton and Larry Mullen Jr. That is the foursome. And it's really been that way the whole time. But it's kind of interesting as you're as I was researching this and just kind of reading it up. And now if you listen to music on any of the streaming services, a lot of times they will tell you these songwriters' names. And it's interesting because a lot of U2 songs have all four of these guys' names on it. And so I wonder if that's the secret to the longevity, is just kind of splitting things up evenly. Even though Bono could easily say, you guys are nothing without me, it's kind of like, nope, everybody gets their share and we're all insanely rich and we're good to go, you know?
right. Yeah, most likely. I'm sure there's something there. All right. With that, though, let's kick things off. So I'm going to be introducing every single song. I'm not going to say the band name every single time. So just remember that this is U2.
Every time.
Yeah. No solo acts here either. So track number one, and you went with I Will Follow.
Yeah. So might as well start at the beginning. So this is the literally the first song off of their first album. And so, yeah, I mean, I figured no better place to start than there. But also, I mean, I really do like this song. I think it's a pretty good introduction to their sound, because their sound is pretty consistent. And it's pretty distinctive. You know, these guys, again, are from Ireland. And so when you think about this song coming out in 1980, it's not going to be disco. It's not going to be pop. It's definitely going to be more punk, right? And that was kind of their early influence. So it's not full on punk at all, right? Like, it's not that close to it. But when you put it in the context of the time and place, you could definitely see that influence more so than you would see, like, I mean, we could probably pull up any playlist from the 1980s and it would sound nothing like I Will Follow. But, yeah, this song, you know, Bono wrote it about apparently his mother. His mother died when he was 14, and kind of wrote this song about kind of that emotional connection with her, even though, you know, and the band was fairly young at this point, so it hadn't been too long since she had passed away. But just that emotional connection and kind of, you know, like the title of the song says, like, I Will Follow, just that connection with her. So I just thought that was kind of interesting because I'd heard the song a million times, never knew about that little nugget.
Yeah, that is. That's exactly what I was looking at too. And I actually was just doing the math in my head. So his mother died September 10th, 1974. That was almost exactly 49 years ago. Which is just like, that's crazy, right? That we're, you know, we talk about a longevity about bands, but here we are almost 50 years later, you know, listening to a song that was influenced by an event rather, you know, that happened 50 years later. So it's just crazy how these things occur. But you're absolutely right about the consistency. That was my largest note here. I was like, looks like it was released, I think, in 1980, but this could have been released like last year. And I would have been like, yep, that's a U2 song, you know?
That's right. Yeah. We talk on the show a lot about, you know, the Bruce filter, the Weezer filter, just these bands having these distinctive sounds. And yeah, this comes through again, first single off their first album. And like you said, you could still hear it today.
Yeah. So if you feel like that's enough of an introduction, you can just stop listening right now, I think. But we hope you keep listening. No, you definitely should. There's some good ones on here. This next one is probably one of their largest songs, I'd guess, in terms of popularity, and maybe one of the more familiar ones. Although, to be honest, they have so many. But this one is Sunday, Bloody Sunday.
Yeah, Sunday, Bloody Sunday. Like you said, definitely one of their more famous songs. And, you know, again, one from early in their career. And they kind of made it known pretty early that they were going to be a little bit political, and they are going to touch on issues, and it's not just going to be kind of rock and roll for the sake of rock and roll. And so the title here came from a 1972 incident called Bloody Sunday in Derry, Ireland, and it's where British troops shot and killed unarmed civil rights protesters in Northern Ireland. And so, you know, there's been a war over there, and everybody can kind of do their own research in the UK, you know, with Ireland and Northern Ireland, and there's all sorts of violence over there. And really, U2 came up, I mean, you think about their ages. I mean, this was very much a part of their childhood. And so this was a landmark event for them kind of growing up. And so to write this song about this violence, and I mean, that was violence that went on. I mean, I remember it. I mean, this song came out and I was really young, you know. It was certainly not listening to U2 when this song originally came out. I was probably like 4 or 5, but certainly, you know, later on, I was still aware of the violence over there. And it's interesting because even now, you know, one of the lines in the song is how long must we sing this song, right? And they talk about, you know, nowadays it can still apply to kind of the gun violence and any violence that we see around us, where it's just like, guys, when are we going to finally get tired of this? And that was really the overarching message of this song, was just like, guys, when is it enough? When is it going to stop? And again, we talk about timeless sound, but I think in this case, and you're going to see this a lot in U2's music, I think the messages are timeless too.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel that in this song. I feel that kind of frustration and that exhaustion of seeing the same kind of news cycle repeat and the same messages and the same this and that. And then, you know, like right back to status quo. And that can be very frustrating. And you mentioned gun violence. I think that's a really good kind of parallel. But there's so many other things out there where you're just like, how are we still letting this happen? Like, we've got to be better than this. And we have repeatedly joked on the show about how we listen to old songs and we're like, well, good thing we solved that problem.
Right.
This is the opposite of that. This is a song that just continue, as you said, can be timelessly played about, you know, us dealing with something that we wish we didn't have to deal with anymore. And I think that really comes through in this song. And as a result, yeah, it's definitely one of the more popular ones because you can play it at any time and just feel that. And you feel that in the way that he sings it here, too. So I really enjoyed this one, and you know, it was a good one. Good number two for the mix.
Yeah, and, you know, this was something that when I learned about it growing up and what the song was about, that violence seemed so distant to me, right? It didn't seem like something, well, that happens over there. That happens in these other countries. And nowadays it's like, no, that happened just down the road. That happened over here.
Right.
And that's, you know, an unfortunate turn of events.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, everything feels a little bit more local. All right. Track number three here is Pride, parentheses, In the Name of Love.
So they talk about Sunday, Bloody Sunday, obviously a very localized event for them. And then you get into Pride, and this song is about Martin Luther King and his life and his assassination, which is thousands of miles away from them. So, you know, really shows just how, again, this is 1984 when they wrote this song, or released this song, rather. And so what a amazing global point of view to have that early. I mean, like you said, I mean, it was 1974. He was 14 when his mother was shot. So here he's 24 and decides to write this rock and roll song about Martin Luther King and kind of the impact he had. So I've also thought, like, looking back, that was much more remarkable than at the time. It was like, well, of course there'd be a song about Martin Luther King. But then it's like, no, it's by this 24-year-old guy, you know, in Ireland. It's like, well, wait a minute. Why is he writing about this? So, yeah, it was, I don't know. It's also been an amazing song. But I think when I looked at it from that perspective, it was even more remarkable.
Yeah, that's a really good point of view. That I hadn't really considered, because you're right. Like, this is not an American band. Like, they've obviously gotten a lot of play time in the United States, and their career is global, and they've played halftime Super Bowl shows and all of that. But yeah, it's 24-year-old Irishman, as you said. So it is really powerful. It kind of speaks to the event that occurred, you know, when MLK was assassinated, and how that was felt everywhere and what that meant too. And I think the lyrics here speak to that in such a powerful way, because he's saying, like, people can die in the name of love. Like, your message is love, and people will reject you for it, and will kill you for it. And like, I think that that's such a powerful different thing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, all their lyrics, and that's what, if you just read the lyrics on the page, right, just take the music out of it, because I've heard some people be like, look, they're not the best guitarist, not the best drummer. And that's kind of true, right? Like, none of these guys are known as the best musician in their field. But I think that's where Bono, like, kind of makes them stand out. And the songwriting makes them stand out, because you definitely feel the emotion from this, from the voice and the performance and all of it. So, yeah, definitely powerful lyrics.
All right. The next one, speaking of feeling all the feels, this one's been used in a number of TV shows, and it is the track With or Without You.
Yeah, With or Without You. Okay, this is from the Joshua Tree album. The next two songs are actually from Joshua Tree, which is one of their more popular albums. But yeah, they don't license out a lot of their music, but for whatever reason, this song has been, like you said, kind of used everywhere. Most notably during Friends. I feel like they use this song a lot on Friends. But more recently, I wanted to call this out with this song, but the FX series, The Americans, used this in the finale. And if you don't watch that show, first of all, it's a fantastic show. So definitely something you should go and watch. It's very captivating. But yeah, when they use this song, it's like the crescendo of the finale. And I think it's just so well used in the show. And but yeah, this song, I don't know. If I hear it from the beginning, it's one of those songs that if I get it right at the start, I'm not going to turn the channel, because I think that beginning part just sucks me in. And just an amazing song. Most people read it as kind of this rocky relationship where it's someone like, I can't live with or without you. But reading up on this, Bono was actually kind of singing about, at this point, he's a global rock star when this song comes out. And he kind of wrote this song about sort of the two sides of himself, which is like, yes, he is Bono. He is this person that belongs to the world and to this music world. But then he's also like, he's married and he has kids and he has a family life. And, you know, like, he kind of talked about these two sides of him. And that was kind of the point of this song. So I thought that was interesting.
That is really interesting. Yeah, I hadn't really considered that. But we see that a lot thematically with certain artists, that after they reach like a certain point in their career, they start to reflect on like, who are they? And dealing with like this enormous weight of fame and celebrity and everything that falls on their lap. The TV show I thought you were going to reference that is a little less, like it's a deep cut reference, was The Office, actually. Whenever Michael Scott puts together an intro to his office, whenever he's introing the branch to the CFO, to the new CFO. And it's played to this song, and it's so good. And so that's always what plays in my mind whenever I hear this song.
Because it's like a minute long, and it says nothing about his branch performance or anything.
Right.
It's just, yeah.
Yeah. I love it. And the CFO's reaction is just great, where he's just like, okay, thank you. But, you know, we were really hoping to kind of dive into the numbers. But yeah, no, it's a great song. Again, really powerful lyrics that kind of speak to that feeling that you described. All right, the next track is Where the Streets Have No Name.
Okay, so this is probably my favorite U2 song just because, you know, this is kind of a Sammer special. It's sort of a slow build and then it really gets going. So I feel like you might appreciate it as well. So, I mean, the music alone kind of gets me, right? And so this is actually on my running mix. I love running to this song. But the inspiration for this one is, you know, Bono kind of overhearing someone talking about, you know, his, you know, someplace in Ireland where based on the name of the street that they live on, you could tell a lot about this person, right? Like, oh, the people in this neighborhood, you know, like are like this and the people over here are like this. And so that's where the name comes from, Where the Streets Have No Names. It's kind of a song about equality where it's like you don't really consider anything about this person just based on where they live, right? Because really that, while that might, you might be able to assume a couple of things, you really don't. They're just assumptions that you're making. And that's certainly the case where I am in Dallas, where you are in New York. I mean, if they give you a couple cross streets, you're like, oh, that's the nice part of town, or, oh, I'm never going to their place, right? Like, you kind of do that. So I thought that was interesting, too. It's kind of a cool thought about equality. And I think of it less about equality in that, like, hey, we're all the same, but more in just the, you meet someone sort of with a blank slate and you're not meeting someone and saying, well, I know this, this, and this about you. Cause really you're just assuming those things about them. You don't really know anything about a person until you get to know them.
Absolutely. Yeah, no. And you're absolutely right. That certainly happens in New York, like it does, I think, in most cities. We got invited to a friend's place and they live in Staten Island. And I'm like, well, I'm not going there.
Well, now that one may be valid. Okay, so that one.
Oh, goodness. But yes, I think that it's so clever, this song, to talk about that, where the streets have no name, to kind of remove a lot of the assumptions, the stereotypes, and let people just be people and not just immediately write them off as you know, whatever you're going to write them off as, just based off of their zip code, their ethnicity, their last name, their skin color, you know, their sexuality, any of these things that we just quickly like make a snap decision or snap judgment on. So I really like this sentiment of hopefully one day, like, you know, you can be in a place where the streets have no name. And like you said, we're just kind of evaluating people as people and their actions rather than what they look like and where they live. I really like the song. I think it's really powerful. And you're exactly right. I wrote here that I love a song with a really long intro. and the opening honestly brings chills to my skin. Like, I think it just has like such a, you just feel cinematic in a way. Like, it feels really, really powerful. And I love that. All right. Track number 6, we are entering the 90s here. And this is One.
Yeah, I think this is their most popular song. I think that's probably as I did my research, I was like, yeah, this is probably it. Where if you were to talk to someone about U2, this is the song that would come up. It's been played in relation to so many like charitable efforts, and it's like this anthem of unity. But when you read the lyrics and really listen to the song, it's kind of about a breakup, right? You know, the lines like, "Did I disappoint you? Leave a bad taste in your mouth." And I thought it was interesting reading up on this because Bono doesn't like the interpretation that the song One means we're all the same. And in fact, there is a explicit lyric where he says we're one, but we're not the same. And he kind of like rebels against this idea of oneness, right? Like, you know, the song, you know, John Lennon's Imagine, where it's imagine there's no this, imagine it's not this. And it's like, we're kind of all the same. Where Bono's like, no, we're all different. But like, we are one people. That doesn't mean we can't support each other. And so like reading that, like researching the song, I think it's even more important nowadays where it's like, yeah, we disagree about stuff. It doesn't mean we have to hate each other, right?
Right.
Like we could still support each other in different ways, even if we disagree about tax policy or whatever it is that you believe in, right? There's this notion now where if you disagree with someone at all, like you're, you know, that you can never be friends with them, when really it's like, I think we've always all kind of disagreed about a lot of things and we could still, you know, get along. So anyway, I love the song. Everybody knows the song, but I'm not sure if they know the full meaning of the song.
Yeah, I wrote here that we could actually put it on our like do not play at our wedding at my wedding mix that we just done if we did a volume two of that, because he himself even said that he expressed amusement that couples have played it at their weddings. And he says, quote, "Are you mad? It's about splitting up."
That's amazing.
So yes, he's definitely like, do not play this at your wedding because it's not what you think it's about. And right, the lyrics really kind of speak to that. Like, there's the line here, "We hurt each other and we do it again." Like, that's not great. It's probably not something you want to start your marriage off on. But yeah, it's a very powerful song, and you're absolutely right. Like, I love that interpretation, and that line specifically I was going to call out too. Like, we're one, but we're not the same. That we can have differences, and we should celebrate those differences, but that doesn't mean, as you're saying, we should hate each other because of them. It's a crazy thought. All right, so track number 7 here, and it's "Who's Gonna Ride Your Wild Horses?"
So this was off the Octoon Baby album, kind of the radio hit off of there. I've always thought it was just a really good like rock song, but it, you know, the band has said with this song they never could quite get it right, and so they don't really play it much live, and so that's kind of interesting. I think the theme of wild horses here has been used so often, right? Like, I know Bruce Springsteen has a song about it, the Rolling Stones, like kind of this chasing wild horses. This one's, you know, a little bit more straightforward. It's about a relationship gone wrong and just kind of, you know, being difficult to deal with. And I like Bono just asking, like, who's going to put up with this? Like, there's an album or there's a line in there about that, which I think is so funny. And he says, "You're an accident waiting to happen. You're a piece of glass on the beach," which I also thought was just a great analogy of like what an accident waiting to happen would be. It's just that piece of glass sitting there.
Yeah, I was going to call that one out too. And I love the next two lines. "Well, you tell me things I know you're not supposed to, then you leave me just out of reach." And I think to me, like, so powerful. Like, you know, if you've ever dated someone who's like an avoidant personality, like they will typically do that to where they'll like bring you in with something, but then take you out of reach. And so it's like they let you in just enough to where you feel like something is going to happen, but then they like push you away to where you're like left out of reach. And it's so frustrating. And so then you just reach that point where you're like, okay, well, good luck to you because I'm out, hopefully, right?
Hopefully, yeah. Chasing them. Well, you get into those conversations where it's like, what does that mean? Nothing. And then they just never want to talk about it. And it's like, well, I think we should explore something there. Yeah.
But yeah, I was amused at reading the note that they like did not like this song and just felt like they couldn't get it right. And yet it's like, you know, popular song that people enjoy, and it's a really good one. I liked it too. So it's funny how that happened. Like, these things make their way into albums and then the bands themselves are like, no, we don't like that.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. This next track, I really loved because it features another really famous singer here. And so the track is The Wanderer, and it features Johnny Cash.
Yeah, so I found this was amazing. This is the last track on the Zooropa album. And it's interesting because this was a time when U2 started getting very like heavy into like synth a little bit and almost more like Euro pop. Like, they really like made a change in their style, like kind of into the 90s. But this song in particular, Bono wrote, and it was kind of inspired by the book of Ecclesiastes in the Bible. And he said the voice he had in mind when he wrote these lyrics was Johnny Cash. And so you don't hear Bono on this track at all. You just hear it's U2 featuring, I mean, it really is. It's not Johnny Cash coming in, you know, kind of as backup vocals. It's he's singing the entire song. And so right. I wanted to put it on here because I just think it's so unique for a band this massive and for a star like Bono to just take a step back and be like, no, it would be better if this guy sang it. Now, this guy happens to be Johnny Cash, right? So it's not nobody, but it's still, I think, pretty impressive.
It is, yeah. And I think, like, you know, knowing that this is kind of a song setting the stage of this like apocalyptic world or post-apocalyptic world, like Johnny Cash's voice is so good for that. Because it's just such a heaviness and like a I don't know, like a density to his voice where you kind of feel that pain and that anguish, you know, like him singing, "I went out walking under an atomic sky where the ground won't turn and the rain, it burns like the tears when I said goodbye." I mean, it's so beautiful. It's like poetry. And then you've got his voice singing it, and you just feel all the words that much more. So I honestly can't imagine this being sung by Bono. I completely agree with his decision to like write, you know, for them to write this song, but then hand it to someone like Cash to sing. It's really, really cool.
Well, it's like the song Hurt, you know, the Trent Reznor.
Yes.
You know, it's like, yeah, Trent Reznor does a great job with it, and it's a great song. But like when you hear Johnny Cash sing it, it's like, no, no, that's the way it should have been done. Yes.
Yes. All right. Track number 9 here. It's Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me, Kill Me.
All right. So on one of my new music mixes, I think it was either early this year, I highlighted U2's contribution to the Sing 2 album, right? Like that was a soundtrack contribution they've had. They've contributed to a number of movie soundtracks over the years. This was their contribution to the Batman Forever soundtrack. Now, don't go see Batman Forever, okay? It's not a great movie at all, but it gave us a pretty strong soundtrack. We get Kiss from a Rose, which we highlighted as a song, you know, made for movie soundtracks. And this song, which I've always kind of always loved this song. In fact, I really do recommend listen to the soundtrack. Don't watch the movie here. But yeah, this song is kind of about fame and what it can do to a person. Like the line I call out here is they want you to be Jesus. Now go down on one knee, but they want their money back if you're alive at 33. Kind of this expiration date that celebrities have where it's just like, wait, this person's still around. And, you know, it's like people who have died early on achieve this sort of legendary status because it's like we never saw them kind of get old or get bad at what they do or anything like that. So I thought this line was just really well written in that regard.
Yeah, I think it's so powerful. That was the one I want to talk about because, I think what they're really saying is that like the media mysticizes these people that die really young. Like we do glorify them and celebrate them. And it's a tragedy, right? I mean, it's really tragic when some, especially because often they end up taking their own lives and it's not like an accident. I think he's really singing about this weird relationship that like the media has with celebrities, especially young ones, where it's like, yeah, like we want all your talent, but then, oh, look, like you're like 50 something, like we don't care about you anymore.
That's right.
Like, and it's so crazy. Like that's so rough. So I think that's a really powerful message here that he's singing about. On a separate note, I do think now we need to maybe put together a mix of like, listen to the soundtrack, don't watch the movie, because I bet that there's a number of films out there.
There's a ton of those.
The soundtrack is really good, but like you should not watch the movie.
It's a great mix idea. Yes. And yeah, people out there, if you've already got suggestions, hit us up at Super Awesome Mix, because I'm sure a lot of people feel that way about it.
Absolutely. All right. So home stretch here, track number 10, a really like an interesting departure from like a U2 sound here. And this is Discotheque.
Yeah. Like I said, their sound really evolved and they started to get really heavy in the synth and electronic and dance. And this was kind of in the mid to late 90s. So this is off an album called Pop. It got mixed reviews. I know, like, as someone who pretty much grew up with this band, when they started to go into this era, people were like, what is this? Because at the time, with no streaming, a lot of that kind of Euro electronic dance music hadn't really made its way over to the US. So it's like we weren't hearing anything really like that on the radio or elsewhere. But then this rock and roll band is kind of putting out songs like this. And we're like, what are we listening to here? So it's really pretty unique. But I like in retrospect, listening to this song, I'm like, this is a pretty good song, right? Like I kind of enjoy it now. But I remember at the time, a lot of people, there was kind of a backlash to this. So yeah, I wanted to include it just because I think it is kind of part of the history of the band. And like you said, it's very different from what you would normally expect from them.
Yeah, it almost reminded me of like the Flight of the Conchords track about fashion. Like it had like this this really like, yeah, you know, like they're really good at synth, right?
Yeah.
And so this had this like synth pop, like dancey, whatever. So that's the song that came to mind whenever I listened to this. But yeah, you know, I think it's important to experiment as a band. We've talked a lot about that. Like, yeah, you're going to get some mixed reviews and some people might be annoyed, but maybe that helps you find like your next sound that is like a mishmash of the two. Or then, you know what, this actually doesn't work for us. And you go right back to what you were doing. So I'm here for that. I'm not going to be upset by that. But I love the line here. You know you're chewing bubble gum. You know what that is, but you still want some. And so I just really like that sentiment of like, yeah, you know that bubble gum is like basically just junk food, but still you find yourself wanting it. It's great. All right. Track number 11, Stuck in a Moment You Can't Get Out Of.
Yeah. So this is off the album All That You Can't Leave Behind in 2000. And this album was a little bit more of a return to their normal sound. So they go through this era where it's a little bit more, you know, dancey electronic music. And then this album takes them back to kind of more standard U2 sound. But I love this song. I can listen to this song just over and over again. It's about a fictional conversation that Bono imagines he would have had with Michael Hutchence of NXS, who committed suicide in 1997. And, you know, if you listen to the lyrics in that context, it really makes that much more sense. And, you know, I think Bono is smart enough to realize, and anybody who's ever dealt with that is smart enough to realize that one conversation is not going to necessarily turn that person around. But I think in that context, it's a really well-written song because he's kind of telling this person, come on, like you can get out of this. No. Like, you know, you're just stuck in this moment you can't get out of, you know, and just, you know, see your way out of it. Come on. And yeah, so I don't know. I just think it's a beautiful song. And I've always thought that. But then listening to it, even in this context, I'm just like, man, it's, I don't know, kind of elevated it for me. So yeah, just an incredible song.
Yeah, you really hear like the frustration, not only I think with his friend, but also with himself in these lyrics. You know, it's like you wish like you could talk to someone and get them to make a different decision and still be around with us. Like you said, like you've got to get yourself together. You've got stuck in a moment. It's like I do think he's both frustrated with himself of maybe feeling like he should have noticed more or something, you know, like, and but also the frustration with a friend for kind of feeling that way. It's never easy to lose anyone to suicide, and so I think like this song is really powerful in that regard, especially unfortunately if you've dealt with that yourself. So yeah, this is a very powerful song and one that again just kind of showcases his ability to write about meaningful things and sing about them in a way that connects with people. All right, track number 12, which actually I think is my favorite track off of this mix. So it was nice that it's the last one. Speaking of songs that honestly just give me chills when I listen to them, but this is City of Blinding Lights.
All right, so this is off the 2004 album, How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb. Now, the idea for this song began in 1997 when they were working on the Pop album, and then they tried to rework it into All That You Can't Leave Behind, and then it showed up on this album. And it really kind of made me laugh thinking about how many songs out there have just been sitting on the shelf for these artists for years. And then they kind of come back to it and kind of, I was like, man, how hard is it to write a song?
You know, like, right.
If Bono, yeah, 20 plus years into a career is like, nope, we don't have it. Nope. Not yet. Nope. And then like, it takes 5, 6, 7 years before they figure it out and get it right. But I'm glad they got it right. Cause I love the song. You know, he describes it as a song about lost innocence and kind of arriving in New York for the first time. And it's, and, you know, you're this celebrity and it's this city of blinding lights. And I think he kind of, you know, wants to go back and relish it a little bit more instead of it being something they had to do for work and sort of all the things, you know, that's what you think about. Everybody looks at it, it's like, wow, what are these glamorous lifestyles that these guys lead? And I think this song kind of reminds, you know, maybe the artist in this case, but everyone that like, whatever you're doing, when you kind of achieve something, you know, really enjoy it and not just think about it as like, oh, okay, I got to go do this or, oh, I got to go do that. And so anyway, this is kind of a song about New York. So it doesn't surprise me that you love it so much, but I don't know. I've always loved this one. So had to finish the mix off with this one.
Yeah, it is really good. I also read that it might have been influenced by a performance after the September 11th attacks, and the line specifically, like, oh, you look so beautiful tonight in the city of blinding lights, that I think he says to the audience or something. And then it like, you know, becomes this song that they released finally in 2004. So I do think that there's like a lot of power in that, too, of just this idea like, hey, you're here. You look beautiful tonight. You know, it's like especially after the city went through what it did in 2001. So yeah, I really enjoy this song, and I think again it's just one of these like cinematic ones that gives me chills to listen to. But great mix. Like I gotta be honest, I was a little dubious going into an intro to U2 mix if I was going to enjoy it as much as I did, but it was good. I think U2 is one of those bands where they're like so large that they have almost equal parts of people who really love them and people who just dismiss them because it's like, oh, U2, like they're too big.
Well, and with so many radio hits, I think any band with a lot of radio hits, sometimes it's just like if you only know the radio stuff, and a lot of the songs I featured on this mix are just radio hits, but I mean, you know, even then, if you don't know the story behind it or anything like that, it's like you become numb to it and it just doesn't mean as much.
Yes.
And really, their whole catalog is pretty substantial. So it's worth kind of going back and just going through albums with there. Well, there you have it. Another super awesome mix for your collection. Plenty of more on the docket for Sammer and I. So we'll get to work on that. And so for Sammer, this is Matt. And we'll see you next time. Super Awesome Mix is brought to you by DLM. Make shopping easy with DLM, the one-stop shop for all your casual clothing needs. Shop DLMSupplyCo.com and enter the promo code AWESOME at checkout to save 15% off your first purchase. That's DLMSupplyCo.com.